Hello, good morning. Welcome to London by Guide. My name's Isabel. I'm a Blue Badge tourist guide here in London, a professional award-winning guide. And I decided during lockdown that I would experiment a little bit with podcasting. So I'm very much at the beginning of a learning curve. My apologies in advance for it being somewhat rough and ready. I was thinking this morning about the Palace of Westminster. Now, until not very long ago, I used to derive a chunk of my income from guiding at the Palace of Westminster. But then a decision was taken to dispense with the Blue Badge guides, the professional guides, and instead to train some in-house staff for the job instead. So we no longer guide there. But of course, all that knowledge, all that information about the Palace of Westminster is still very much in my head. And as I've been reading about the Palace of Westminster, listening to things that are going on there, I realise I've got a very clear idea of where they are talking about, because I have walked the line of route so many times. I am talking hundreds here, you know, not tens. So I thought perhaps today I would do something on here about the Palace of Westminster. When we first started doing the tours, there was just a fairly small group of us, those of us who had taken the endorsement course in 1999 and passed it, which allowed us to then guide in the Palace of Westminster. It always comes as a surprise to people that Blue Badge guides actually we have to pass exams. We do a lot of studying. So those days, we would begin our tour in the base of the Victoria Tower, which is the royal entrance to the Palace of Westminster. And the first part of the tour then, and it continued down the years, was always following the line of route taken by the sovereign at the state opening of Parliament. Now, you don't have to go into the Palace of Westminster to realise it's a really gorgeously decorated building. But although you might see all this decoration on the outside, it's really nothing to what is on the inside, particularly at the House of Lords end of the building. The House of Commons was bombed in the Second World War and had to be rebuilt anyway, but I gather it was always quite a lot plainer. So we'd go up the stairs into the Norman porch, start our tour proper there, into the Royal Robing Room, which is a really lovely room. And that's where the Queen would get into all her regalia for the state opening of Parliament. And the crown, the Imperial State Crown, which is normally kept over at the Tower of London with the rest of the crown jewels, would have been brought to the Palace of Westminster ahead of her arrival, displayed on a cushion in the Royal Gallery, which is the next room. And the guests there would know when the Queen had arrived because the crown on its cushion would be taken into the Royal Robing Room. Now, if you look outside the Palace of Westminster the next time you're allowed out and can walk around there, you'll see there's a Union flag flying from the top of the Victoria Tower. But when the Queen comes, and only when the Sovereign is present, that flag is replaced with the Royal Standard so that, as we like to say, everybody can see that the Queen is in the house. Once she's all ready, the Queen processes through the Royal Gallery. She's got her entourage behind her. She's got various people walking in front of her holding emblems of state. And she goes on down through the Prince's Chamber and into the Chamber of the House of Lords, where she delivers the Queen's speech. Although we call it the Queen's speech, it's not actually written by her. It's written for her by her government, outlining what the government hopes to achieve during the next session of Parliament. And if you've ever heard the Queen reading it, you'll know she reads it like one of the worst people you remember at reading at school. So it's on a monotone. And it's not because she's bad at reading, or at least I assume it's not because she's bad at reading. It's so that she shows no partiality, no bias to any part of the speech. So you can't tell by listening to her which bits she likes and which bits she doesn't. She's always seen a copy of the speech the night before. You never get a scenario where she whips off her glasses and looks around questioningly at the assembled company of lords with a, "Are you sure?" And it's said that a member of Parliament is kept hostage at Buckingham Palace while she's delivering the Queen's speech, just in case Parliament gets any funny ideas about bumping her off. Once she's finished the speech, she retraces her route, gets back into the Irish state coach in which she's arrived, goes back to Buckingham Palace, and then on to what other appointments she's got for the rest of the day. So, I've only mentioned the House of Lords, but of course the House of Commons is involved in this as well. So members of the House of Commons are summoned to the House of Lords to hear the Queen's speech. And the person who summons them is Black Rod. Now, Black Rod is the official in the House of Lords who's responsible for security and ceremonial. And it's called Black Rod, not because he's black or he's called Rodney, but because he carries a black staff or rod. So there he is in all his regalia as well. And off he goes, or she goes, down to the House of Commons where they see Black Rod arriving and slam the door in Black Rod's face. This is one of the traditions of Parliament. Undeterred, Black Rod strikes the door three times. Members of Parliament traditionally say all sorts of rude things, which roughly translated mean go away, but eventually relent and allow Black Rod in. He delivers his message that they are to attend the Queen in the House of Lords. And slowly, two by two, they come down to the Lords, but not all of them, because there isn't room for all of them. They can't come into the chamber itself because they're not members of that chamber. So they have to stand behind the barrier. So what you get is the senior members of Parliament, new members of Parliament who'd never before attended a state opening. And that's when the Queen delivers her speech. Once it's over, she goes back to Buckingham Palace. The Commons go back to their end of the building and they debate the Queen's speech. So at that point, our tour, or the content of our tour, starts to change. Because when we leave the House of Lords, we're moving into Commons territory. So we then often go into a committee room or go down. I say we go, we used to go. And then we go down to the central lobby. The clue is in the name. It is the central part in the building. If you watch the news on British television, you will often see members of Parliament being interviewed in the central lobby. You'll see the journalists doing their pieces to camera there as well. So it's usually a really familiar place to people who visit. We go on down towards the House of Commons. I should say there's a lot of art in the Houses of Parliament, usually all historical scenes along this line of route. Though if you go to Portcullis House, which is the modern extension on the other side of the road, you'll see there are modern portraits, and members of Parliament can choose works of art from the collection to hang in their offices. So we go down. We see where Black Rod has damaged the door through repeatedly striking it down the centuries, or other various Black Rods have damaged the door. And once we've explored the voting lobbies, we go into the chamber of the House of Commons. And usually people are really surprised how small it is, because when you see it on the television, it looks like quite a big space. But although you are elected to a seat in the House, that is not a seat with your name on it, because there is not enough room in there for all members of Parliament to sit down. So that's partly why you get people standing around. Now, as I said earlier, the House of Commons was bombed in the Second World War. And it was thought, well, what they could do was actually build a bigger House of Commons. Did I just say the House of Lords was bombed? The House of Commons was bombed in the Second World War. So they thought, well, they could build a bigger one. They could accommodate everyone. But Winston Churchill and others said, well, why do that when most of the time the Commons is fairly empty and you'd have a big, empty, echoing chamber? Why not keep it small, keep it intimate? And then if there is an important debate, it generates a far more exciting atmosphere. I don't think they were thinking about coronavirus at this particular point. So we explore the House of Commons, look at the various things in there, including the place where the mace would sit when the House is in session. The mace represents the crown in Parliament. Talk about the role of the Speaker, who is an elected member of Parliament, who's then elected by the whole House to that role, and where various people sit. Then what we would do would be return to the central lobby and into St. Stephen's Hall. Now, St. Stephen's Hall is built on the site of the St. Stephen's Chapel. That was the original permanent home of the House of Commons. Up to the 16th century, the Commons didn't have a permanent home. They were fairly itinerant, though most of the time they would meet over in the Chapter House at Westminster Abbey. But royalty moved out of the Palace of Westminster in the 16th century, and Edward VI gave the chapel — this is my cat in the background, you can hear running around, shaking his bell — gave the chapel to the Commons. And so they sat on the benches in the chapel, and the benches in the chapel faced each other, and that's why we have the layout we have today, this rather adversarial style of parliament that we have. So after the fire of 1834, which destroyed the Palace of Westminster — very, very little of the old Palace of Westminster remains — and the new Palace of Westminster was built, because St. Stephen's Chapel was so important, they built the St. Stephen's Hall on the same site and to the same specifications. So it's quite an important spot. And then we would finish the tour in Westminster Hall, which is the biggest, grandest space in the Palace of Westminster, much plainer than anything you'll see in the House of Lords, but for my money, all the more impressive, and absolutely freezing in the winter. This is where medieval kings would have held their great councils, the origins of Parliament today, where senior advisers from people all around the country, including clergymen, would help them to govern effectively. It's the place that's used for lyings in state. So this is where the Queen Mother's body lay in state in 2002. She's the last one to be there. The one before her was Winston Churchill in 1965, so they don't happen very often. The Queen has delivered many, many speeches from the steps of Westminster Hall, all her Jubilee speeches, and she's not alone in delivering speeches there. People who have delivered addresses to an audience combined of members of the Lords and the Commons include Barack Obama, Pope Benedict, and unforgettably Nelson Mandela. So hopefully that will give you a taste of a visit to the Palace of Westminster, which, as I say, you can still do with the in-house guides, and there's also an audio guide. Thank you very much for listening. Stay well.